Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Malvina. Thank you for joining me on this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here. I really love the name Techies Podcast. So cute.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. So let's tell the audience, you know, who you are. So let's start with your name, your pronouns, where you're from, and your current role or company.
Hi, I am Malvina DeSalvo. Please feel free to call me Mel. I am the CEO of Plateful, and I was born and raised on the northwest side of Chicago.
I love that. Love that. So born and raised, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Nice. So let's start at the very beginning. I'm actually very excited to hear more about your company. So let's start with what sparked, you know, this idea, especially when you have something that you're passionate about. I'm curious what inspired you to start Plateful and why focus specifically on children's nutrition.
It's a great question. You know, really, this was born out of my own necessity. I'm my target demographic. I am the mom to two premature children. And when my oldest reached solid foods, we were really struggling. One or two bites is all I could get. We were seeing the pediatrician every month just for a weight check. And at the time, she was labeled failure to thrive. And the pediatric recommendations at the time were a calorie-dense diet full of saturated fats and highly processed foods. So think things like chicken nuggets, case meat, french fries, macaroni and cheese. They even asked me to put butter in her milk. You know, and I am a person who was raised with the Clean Plate Club. I was not allowed to leave the table till I cleaned my plate. So at that point, I was very cognizant. I had not introduced any of those things to her. But, you know, you feel almost embarrassed and ashamed of your inability to do the most basic thing, which is feeding your child, which you think is natural. So I followed the recommendation. So I started giving her all of that, you know, chicken nuggets, mac and cheese. After a few months, they were like, okay, great. Her weight went up. You can go back to a healthy diet. But if I've been giving you happy meals or whatever it is, you think I could take you back to chicken breast and some roasted vegetables? It essentially exacerbated our problem. So the curriculum that Plateful uses today is really founded on trial and error, and what I found really worked with her, my son, and other children that have come through my home.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have a very deep connection, very personal experience to this problem. Yeah. For sure.
100%. Once I started asking your moms for advice, they were in the same leaky rowboat that I was in. There wasn't really a ton of great advice out there, you know?
Yeah. And to that point, like the health and nutrition space has exploded, you know, in recent years. Like there are so many new applications, so many wearables, platforms that focus on like better living or, you know, like better alternative solutions to nutrition, to food and all that. So I'm curious. There's not much with kids nutrition, I don't think, you know, so this is a very specific challenge. So in your opinion, you know, what problem is Plateful solving? Plateful solving, like, you know, for then other nutrition and health tech startups are not really addressing.
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, we think that there's a significant problem in nutrition, especially in the U.S. You know, parents report one out of every two child is a picky eater, and astronomical percentages, like 77% of families report their children are afraid to try new foods, you know, or even just based on the look of it. You know, but, you know, yeah, there are apps out there today that claim to do some pediatric nutrition education. Most of them are kitchen demo games where you can go ahead and cut up food and maybe throw things in a frying pan. You know, myplate.gov does a great job explaining what the food pyramid is. On their website, you can find handouts, flashcards that you can print, but there's no technology or interactivity at the same level that Plateful is offering. And there certainly isn't anything that is a hardware device, a smart food plate that engages them at the dinner table.
And to be honest, I didn't even know those were resources were available. And I'm a first time mom. I have 3-year-old twin boys. And luckily, they're not picky eaters. They actually eat whatever I eat. it's just not just the only thing that they don't need is spicy food yet. So I've been pretty fortunate in that area, but I do hear a lot of horror stories about kids that wanting to eat, you know, what's recommended. And so anyway, I think that there's definitely a need here. Building a startup in the health tech space is no small feat. You know, there's a lot of regulations, a lot of science, like accuracy and trust. So it can be tough to get any idea off the ground. So I'm curious for you, you know, what have been some of the biggest early challenges, I guess, that you have faced as you're bringing this idea to life?
You know, and I'm going to talk to people who actually want to build a startup. I'm not talking to people who might be interested in Playful or VCs. I want to talk to people with a dream and an aspiration to build something. Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you, first of all, building something in the health tech space is so hard. And then you add a hardware device. Hardware is typically considered much harder than, say, a SaaS product. The biggest challenges for me early on was prototyping, to be quite honest. You know, I am not an engineer. I have a deep background in healthcare, but I am not an engineer. I'm not a software engineer, not a robotics or electrical engineer. So I had little to no prototyping experience. And when you think about Playful, we are an app. We have animated learning modules and we have a smart food plate. Any one of those things could stand alone as an independent product. So it's really three products under one that I had to build out. And so I didn't know how to build an app. I certainly didn't know how to work with circuits and Arduinos and, you know, how do I get a sound card in here? How do I get the smart to talk to my mom? You know, how do I even CAD draw? You know, like every step of the way was crawling over broken glass, you know? So, you know, if you're looking to start a startup and you're looking to build an invention, look out in your local community, find resources. There are accelerators, there are incubators, there are universities. You can partner with universities in their engineering department. A lot of the time they're looking for real world applications of products or businesses that their students can get real world experience from. Accelerators and incubators in different cities offer, you know, entrepreneurs an opportunity to come in, get assistance with prototyping or standing up your business. Like there was so, I didn't even know what product market fit was when I started, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I actually had not thought about universities that can offer that type of support. So that's really great. So in the topic of support and I mean, maybe also funding, I'm curious about your experience, you know, as you're looking at creative ways to fund and to keep these things moving, how did you initially fund Playful? Like, have you been bootstrapping or what strategies have helped you kind of stretch those resources so that you can make this happen?
That's a really great question. That's like, I think, you know, if you ask most entrepreneurs, that'll say funding is the biggest obstacle, not prototyping, you know, but yeah. We were bootstrapped. We still are bootstrapped. You know, I put in a couple K into the business early on. But, you know, essentially I was doing a number of different things to get things moving, applying to incubators, accelerators, to get access to resource, to get access to education, possibly access to prototyping assistance. I literally would network, meet different entrepreneurs, barter skill sets. I worked for a really well-known entrepreneur in the Chicago community for probably a year or two. Anytime she'd call me, basically like contract work, I'd trade my services in exchange for some prototyping help. She's an engineer. So it was wonderful, but I would do HR work for her. I'd do project management or whatever it took. And you know, made wonderful friends in the community as well and would ask people for help for CAD drawing. I think for me, the biggest hurdle I had to overcome was learning to ask for help. I am so independent to my own detriment. It took me a good year, maybe year and a half before I was willing to ask for help or to even barter, you know, but really you can't build a startup by yourself. It's just not necessarily feasible. So learning to rely on community, learning to ask for help, but also be willing to help others. It's a very cyclical relationship in the entrepreneur space.
Yeah. And I love that, actually. I love that you mentioned the there's such a powerful community in Chicago too. And we'll talk about that community in a minute, but I think like recognizing that it's all about community and also not being afraid of asking for help is huge, especially when you're a founder, because sometimes you get a little in your own world trying to make this happen that you forget that there is a community out there that can help. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, but I want to ask you one more thing about, you mentioned product market fit. So before building, you know, the product, you know, anyone really, many founders focus on providing proving that proof of concept, right? Testing whether people truly want the product they're creating, and that stage can make or break startups' directions. And a lot of them are going to be iterating a lot, but I'm curious, what has been your approach to validating the idea before building, you know, the full product?
Oh my gosh. You know, if you do the accelerator incubator route, like I suggest to you listeners out there, one of the core things that you're going to focus on is that customer discovery, right? So, you know, if you take different courses, customer discovery is a multitude of things. It's getting out there and talking to your potential customers, customer personas. It's, you know, first of all, validating that the problem exists and it's larger than just you and maybe your core friends that you've asked. And then, you know, it could be as simple as asking how would you like to, or what can I do for you for this problem? Or, you know, the jobs that be done in interview styles, so where you don't mislead them. But ultimately, it's also pitching your product to them and asking for feedback. It could be making lo-fi prototypes. You know, I think we've seen so many iterations of Plateful. I often think of Spanx. I think I saw in their office, they have a display wall of all of their prototypes that have come along the way. And so, you know, that's what I would, and my future vision is to have a display wall of all the iterations of Plateful. Especially the hardware, because it's seen a number. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in some of the simplest prototypes I did could have been just, I had a food plate that was segmented, graduating to, you know, 3D printed plate, and I put a computer screen under it, and I put a PowerPoint presentation demonstrating lights flickering and audio files under it. You know, so it didn't respond to touch necessarily, but it gave you a visual of what it might look like. You know, I wasn't a software engineer, so I turned to no-code software platforms, and was really fortunate to be included in an accelerator with Bubble. And even though it was a no-code platform, it was very challenging to build out a full app, and it really helped with thinking through all the things that you might not think of because you're not a software engineer when you talk about app design and, you know, moving of screens and all the things that need to be on the page. You know, so now fast forward, we're probably iterated so many times. It's crazy out there.
Yeah, I would be interested in looking at all the different iterations that you've created. I was just at an event a couple of weeks ago. You know Manuela, I'm sure, from Cadeia? Mm-hmm. So I went to their office because they had an event there, and
I was gonna come.
Oh my god, it was awesome! And she had she had all of the iterations of the vending machine there, and what they looked like. It was so cool to see because I connected with her back in 2022, and when it was like the first one out there, and then now there's like four, and it's so cool, like the way that, you know, time can definitely shift and change your product as you move. So on that note, like early feedback, whether from mentors, from advisors or investors, like it can be very invaluable when you're changing your company's trajectory. So those conversations can give you can give you new ideas, it can spark new decisions or changes. So what's been your experience when you're talking to potential investors or mentors, you know, this early on? Have you made some iterations because of that feedback, or what has been the process?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm so thankful to be at a place where we are much closer to launching product, because then that enabled us to actually put product in front of people that looks like, feels like much closer to what the end product will look like. And I think for a lot of people, the light bulb went off. So I think in the early days when I would describe the product, people still were not getting it, not resonating with it, because it doesn't exist. And, you know, the concept of it, but once you show people, kids using the product or do a demo, they're like, oh, this is so cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in the beginning, people were like, you're going to have a plate at the table. Is there a screen in the plate? No, there's not a screen in the plate. You know, some of the early pushback is, we don't want a screen at the dinner table. There's no screen at the dinner table. But yeah, I mean, you take feedback. Most of the feedback that I found to be super invaluable was behavioral science feedback. You know, so a lot of the plate is designed for changing behavior or establishing behavior. So using technology and techniques to foster, certain behaviors at the dinner table, that was huge.
Can you describe how the technology is used? Like how are the kids interacting with the plate?
Yeah, you know, and so I'll pull up one of my prototypes here, but essentially, you know, what we're really did, and this is a prototype, future state, we'll have a five plate design that should be out here shortly. But, when we turn on the plate, we ask parents to plate their children's meals. Our plate takes a reading of everything that's on the plate. So we know macros, how much grams you've put for each section. You log into our app. You can either take a photo or from drop down selection, tell us what you're serving. So you could say, we're serving broccoli, we're serving chicken, we're serving quinoa, whatever it is. Children watch learning modules for those specific food items. Our learning modules cover a multitude of things. We're really trying to establish, nutrition literacy and eating for health and not eating for taste. So children go on a food origin story. They learn about farming, supply chain, harvesting, how food travels to meet them at their plate and what it does for their body system. So we might show them an avocado and say, this avocado came from Mexico, a pictorial image of a map of a globe. Here's Mexico. Here's what the people of Mexico look like, their music, their food. Here's how it travels to meet you at your plate and then what it does for your body. We explain what proteins are and how that's going to help you build lean muscle so that you're strong enough to do the monkey bars at the park so that you can grow and your legs will reach the pedals and your tricycles. So we try to match things with developmental milestones that resonate with kids. They can understand, wow, okay, this food is going to drive these changes physically. And so really nourishing our bodies, why it's so important. And, you know, after every learning module, they get a little quiz. Correct answers gets them coins in the app for gamified experiences. And then they move on to the plate. By this point, they've learned a lot about those food items. Once children reach the smart food plate, we start with the vegetable section. That will be the first thing that lights up. We take readings once they've plated their meal, letting them know that we know how much, if they put 3 ounces of a vegetable, 2 ounces of a protein, 2 ounces of a carbohydrate. So we know what they've plated. They've told us in the app what they're serving. We'll light up the vegetable section and we look for engagement. We can recognize touch, changes in weight. So if they're not interacting with their vegetable section, which is where we want them to go first, we're trying to get kids to eat their most nutrient-dense food items first. So we move them through vegetable, protein, and then carb currently. So if they engage with the vegetable section, they'll get congratulatory light sequences. They'll get congratulatory statements. They'll get a coin noise, letting them know that they've earned additional coins in the app, and they can use that for gamified experiences like building an avatar. If they go to the carbohydrate section first, we try to redirect them towards the vegetable section, reminding them what they learned, playing audio files from that learning module. So really, most of the kids really resonated with the lights and the plate talking to them. They found that so amazing. We just completed pilot testing, and almost every child said, I'm not eating that, which is perfect. Great. You know, we, during pilot testing, I asked parents, please serve a vegetable that is either not accepted or disliked or never introduced. So it's foreign to them. So don't serve me things that I know your kid will eat, because that's not going to help me validate if it works. So, I've got amazing footage of kids saying, I'm not eating that. Like, no, I'm not tasting it. And 100% of the children in pilot testing were willing at minimum to pick up the vegetable. 95% of them were willing to engage further, whether that's smelling it, licking it, tasting it, taking a bite. And that's massive when we talk about, you know, expanding children's palates and getting them mm-hmm. to eat. Research tells us it takes anywhere from 10 to 20 exposures before a child might accept a food. So if it's taking 10 or 20, you can expect that that first engagement, you're not getting them to bite. So to see a 95% percentile of children willing to bring it and engage different senses, that's massive.
Yeah. And what are the recommended age that you're kind of targeting for kids?
Yeah, we're targeting ages 1 to 5. You know, we'll target as young as 6 months for essentially parent engagement to help them drive what they should be introducing to foods. But we want to reach kids on the onset of introduction to solids. We're trying to help parents avoid picky eating and bad habits. And mm-hmm. so if we can get them right when they're starting their solid food journey, the battle for healthy diet is much lower. But yeah, we believe we can help get parents who are behind the eight ball, who might have a 3, 4, 5 year old who is severely picky. And so we yeah. don't think that when we talk about playful and we talk about, you know, our different customers, we're not just talking about, you know, parents with picky eaters, but we're talking about parents who may be having a medical diagnosis attached to it. They may be following endocrinology, GI, mm-hmm. You know, they might be seeing a nutrition clinic. They might be having blockage due to poor fiber. They may not be on the growth and height chart at all because of poor nutrition. And we're also targeting, you know, parents who simply want to give their kids a better chance at better health as they age. Much like you see products on the market that teach you traditional literacy, ABCs 1, 2, 3, future state, we see Playful no different as providing nutrition literacy. And that's for everyone.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think my kids would like something like that. I haven't really explored much with technology for them, but I think that would be something that I think I would like to
test out.
You'll
let me know. I'm happy to come over and let them try it.
Yeah, please, anytime. All right, so let's transition a little to kind of like the picture of success, you know, like the vision of what the world looks like once this idea has kind of taken off the ground. I'm curious, you know, when you imagine Playful in action and what does success look like for you? Like what kind of change would you like to see families on their daily lives using Playful?
Yeah, you know, I think 77% of parents cite mealtime as a source of stress and anxiety. So, you know, I think every mom can really like, what am I going to make for dinner? And if you have a picky eater, I've talked to some moms who their kids only eat 4 items. They'll only eat rice and yogurt, chicken nuggets, and, you know, ranch. That's so limiting. So some of these moms are like, I have to have rice and yogurt every day because I know at least he's getting a protein and a carb that way. You know, so for me, future state success looks like a multitude of things. It's, you know, being a mainstream product, being on the Target shelves, but not just, you know, whether that's in the food aisle or in the toy aisle, but in the technology aisle. It's helping families establish healthy eating habits from the beginning, avoiding picky eating, seeing an uptake of vegetables and produce in general for these kids. The vast majority of kids have a severely highly processed diet. And so almost like I think 75% of their nutrients on average come from processed foods, which is so bad for your gut. So for me, ultimately, I want to see improved diet in families and help parents make it easier to get their kids to accept produce.
Yeah. And from what you were sharing earlier about the tech and like the product itself, like I couldn't help to also think about how partnerships could really help you also. Like you could always partner with brands, you know, design the plate in Disney branding or like, you know, Bluey branding or something along those lines. How cool would that be, Matt? That would be super awesome.
When we talk about like, you know, plates, it's so interesting because I see us as straddling a couple different industries. You know, is our competitor a food plate? If our competitor is a food plate, we're looking mm-hmm. at plates, maybe some wood plates, metal plates, and then just designs on them essentially. Yeah. You know, whether that's Disney cars or whatever that's, you know, but there's no tech, there's no advocacy to get the kids to actually eat the food items.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the community and the support that you're getting because you're building right here in Chicago. So the city is known for its strong like startup culture and everybody's very collaborative, you know, support. The support system is really pretty good. So I imagine that being part of this ecosystem has influenced your journey in some interesting ways. So how has being part of the Chicago startups ecosystem influenced your path so far?
Oh, huge. You know, I have a background in the healthcare industry. I worked in a corporate sector for about 20 years. When I decided to pursue this, I had no idea how to even start. And I was really fortunate that these two beautiful women who also worked at Blue Cross were trying to cross over and essentially create their own type of, you know, two-day accelerator incubator. And they were looking for people, moms who had business ideas, who wanted to explore further. And using their corporate connections, they got people in product development, people with customer discovery experience. And they literally had a two-day workshop and included focus groups with moms. So you got to flesh out your idea, make sure that the problem exists, you know, see is your solution viable, do some focus group with moms to see if they thought your product was great. But, you know, out of that, it's like I got introduced to MHUB, you know, mm-hmm. and then eventually Polsky in 1871 and Matter, you know, and then you start crossing state lines and finding other Midwest, you know, mm-hmm. Ecosystem partners. But, you know, discovering places like Polsky, which is 100% free right now, you can join, you know, their accelerator, their incubator for free, which will give you access to a number of classes. So along with just prototyping and executing and building, there's a lot of white paper knowledge, you know, so you could go to a college or university and get a certificate program or a master's in entrepreneurship, or you can go to an accelerator and incubator and take various classes and learn about what is customer discovery, what is product market, what is prototyping look like, what is a go-to-market strategy. It's all of that. So I've been really lucky and I've taken advantage of everything that Chicago has to offer and beyond, you know, so I'm a member of, you know, accelerators that are in the East Coast, you know, so it's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just going to ask, where do you think founders should begin? But you just listed all the resources. And I actually think, I mean, they're all amazing, including even Matter, that focuses in health tech solutions. So I definitely see that there is so much support in Chicago. And if you also need to come and share, I don't think you have, right? You haven't shared with 1 million cups yet what you're building?
No, I want to come.
You gotta come and show us. The community is super helpful. Like there's always an ask. You know, we ask the founders to let us know how we can help, whether that's introductions to more ecosystem partners, introductions to potential VCs, or even private equity people. Like, just you should come and definitely share your product, because it's great. I love MHUB also. I mean, I just did a tour not too long ago, and it was super cool. For sure. All right. Well, before we close off, I want to ask you about just the future. You know, looking ahead, every startup has its milestones that they're chasing. So from product launches to partnerships to impact goals, like, I'm curious what the near future looks like for you and your team. Like, what are the next big milestones for Playful, and over the next 6 or 12 months or beyond, like, what are you hopeful for?
Yeah, you know, we just finished our own internal pilot. We have some pilots in the works. I'm waiting for, you know, HR companies to approve my ability to socialize them. Yeah. But I have a really great one coming up here in a week or two, but some with really large organizations that I'm super excited for. And I think, you know, those partnerships will really help unlock some additional doors for Playful and validate us with the scientific community. So, you know, we're looking to do a number of things. We're looking for partnerships and with strategic players that share our customer community, you know, so do they serve children and families? Do they focus on nutrition? You know, are they respected in the community? Can we get some published research white papers demonstrating that Playful works as designed? You know, because we do want doctors and providers to resonate with the product and use it in their skill basket. When we talk about peds, and especially when we talk about the hospital setting, whether we talk about being able to do this in home use, which I think 100%, I think doctors could also use this. So if you're seeing a patient and you're seeing them for nutrition as a key component of their care plan. You know, whether you're a PCP, GI, or a food clinic, it's difficult to see people and at a frequency where impact can be made. You know, so a lot of those patient settings are once a month, once a quarter, if you're lucky, once a week. But many families can't afford food therapy once a week. And once a week still is a light touch, you know what I mean? Where, you know, they can deploy this in the home use, give it to their patient population. And this is daily habit reinforcement. And we can send the data to physicians so they can track how their patients are doing, track what foods they're eating. You know, but for us, what I'm so excited about is we are developing the first of its kind data set. So there's no data in the world that actually examines at a detailed level, what are our children in America eating? How are they eating? And how is there any science-backed way to get kids to actually eat their foods? So with Future State, we look to employ AI and machine learning where we can study, you know, okay, if I've served you broccoli over 10 times, how many of those kids accepted that food? What were some commonalities or precursors to get them to accept that broccoli? Mm-hmm. Is there a science-backed path that can shorten the timeline from getting kids from that 10 to 20 exposure rate down to 1 to 5? And that's really what we're focused on.
Yeah. Well, I'm very excited for what you're building, and I'm very excited to have you at the Chicago Venture Summit. So I know that there are many people listening right now, probably, that are early stage. You know, that they might see a problem, they might have passion about solving it, but they're not really sure where to begin. And I think I love that your story, that you had all these ideas and then just kind of brought them to life on your own. So what kind of advice would you give other founders who are still kind of in that early stage ideation phase, but want to create some real impact too?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a number of things that I would suggest aside from looking in your local community to see if there's startups. Use AI tools. You know, I was not as fortunate when I started to have ChatGPT and AI tools to help me shortcut the development of prototyping. I use all of that every day, and they help me refine my code, and they help me, you know, use that to help develop learning modules, which is shortcut of the development. When you talk about animation, you know, so having AI tools really helps with that. But ultimately, what moves the needle is action. You know, and I think a lot of the time people get caught up with, let me learn about the thing that I want to do. And I'm guilty of that. I wasted a lot of time in the beginning, you know, like, okay, I'm in this program and I'm going to focus on learning. And you really should be prototyping. You really should be getting customers. I think, you know, originally I was like, I wanted to have a better product to put it in front of people. I, you know, it's, you have to be willing to be embarrassed of your several prototypes, not just the first one. If you're not embarrassed of your first prototype, then you waited too long, essentially. People is what people typically will tell you. You know, so I think that's when I started biggest movement and traction is action, and not so much learning and developing a business plan and, you know, build it, design it, find a way to make a lo-fi prototype of whatever it is that you want to build and ask people for feedback. You can even go on places like Fiverr and see if you can get someone to CAD draw something that you're envisioning for $50, $100, and then, you know, go find an accelerator, incubator, or a makerspace that you can get access to a 3D printer and just print it and play with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go, you know, they even make like kid plastic, like a kid toy that is essentially a pencil, but it melts plastic. And so you can do 3D design work with this plastic, but essentially you could 3D print from a pen, you know, and that's available at Target. You could take clay and mold what it is. You know, if it's a SaaS product, there are AI tools that can build you an app in a few minutes. Now, they won't look like your long-term vision. I mean, there are no-code platforms. Just start building and get out there. Ultimately, I think, you know, doing nothing is what you'll regret most. You know, if you're getting this intuition and you're getting these ideas coming to you, whether your faith guides you and tells you that's coming from God, or you're spiritual and you say your ancestors are speaking to you, whatever it is, the ideas and thoughts are coming to you in your mind, and they were placed there for a reason. Even if you have a W-2 job, and most of us do, most of us don't have the privilege to leave our job to go pursue an idea. Do it at night on night and do it on the weekend. And, you know, do it at the pace that you can, and just keep moving, keep trying to keep your dream alive.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for that. Incredibly helpful. It resonates. You know, I don't have particularly any idea right now, but I know that if in the future I do have one, I think I'm just going to go ahead and do it. You know, that's great.
I said, I'll go to my death, but tired, but not regretful.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. Yeah, this has been super lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time. Now, as we wrap up, I always like to ask folks that if anyone listening wants to stay in touch with you or they want to, you know, reach out to connect with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me at playful.com. It's PL8FUL.com. Or you can simply Google me. But if you Google Playful, we're one of the top 10 results. Yeah. So,
and you're on LinkedIn also. Can folks find you on LinkedIn?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Alina DeSalvo.
Sweet. I will probably put that on the show notes as well to help people out. But thank you so much, Mel, for taking the time to chat. I appreciate you. Best of luck. Excited for next week. And I'll see you at the Venture Summit.
I will see you at the Venture Summit. And I want to do the cup. So let's get
back. Yes, for sure.
A week from now.
Okay, sounds good. We'll be in touch.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are at Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.